The next case.
324-0361 WC Robert Berndt Appellant by Kurt Nierman versus the Illinois Workers' Compensation Commission et al. Phoenix Logistics Incorporated and Keenan Transit Company Appellee by Jennifer Kieswetter.
Thank you. Mr. Nierman, you may proceed.
Thank you, Justice. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Kurt Nierman. I'm proud to represent Robert Berndt in what's now our 10th year of litigation. We have a really interesting, I think, law school case here about whether or not estoppel issues apply to workers' comp decisions. We had the unique situation where we had multiple employers fighting out in the same room under the same rules of evidence in the same case, who was going to be responsible for the case. And the only reason the one AmeriSave was in the case was because Keenan and Phoenix tried to point the finger at AmeriSave and offload liability onto AmeriSave. Turns out there was no basis for doing that. The judge issued his three rulings, and I'm talking about the 2015 accident. The judge issued his three rulings, pinning Phoenix and Keenan with all the liability, issuing the same written findings for each of the decisions, wherein Keenan and Phoenix were identified as those responsible for everything and assessing massive penalties and fees for the games that were played up to the point of trial. And there's no reason to go through that because I've laid it all out in the brief unless you want to hear it. But I have three different points, three main points about why, and this is really, I'm talking about the agency now. The agency overstepped its authority in reducing my penalty award on review. Number one, estoppel applies to workers' comp decisions as much as it does in any circuit court proceeding. When AmeriSafe decision became final because no one filed a review for it, that means the findings contained within that decision became binding on everyone who participated and fought out the litigation. That included Phoenix, that included Keenan, that included me. It also bound the commission. That's why the commission had no authority to change what the arbitrator had done, because we had a final decision. It was res judicata. The commission lacks equitable powers. Privity is not a reason for, you know, making an exception. The commission has no power to issue contradicting decisions, which it did by changing the penalty awards against Phoenix and Keenan as compared to the AmeriSafe award. So common law standing also doesn't apply because the act tells us who has standing in workers' compensation cases. We don't have to go to common law standing principles, even if we did. Phoenix and Keenan still had all the incentive in the world to fight and appeal the AmeriSafe ruling. And what's important about this is there's nothing in the act, there's nothing in the rules that say that they couldn't have added the Phoenix number to the review petition. When they didn't do that, they allowed AmeriSafe to become final. And I think this appeal would therefore be moot because this was all done and settled back when the reviews were not perfected. So now, in the event that there's some reason to go beyond estoppel, and I think the commission also violated its discretion by reducing the penalties. And here's the reason why. A penalty award is reviewed under an abuse of discretion standard, as you tell us. Abuse of discretion, as you've told us, under the Kronk case, the recent Kronk versus Illinois Workers' Comp Commission, you told us when a decision's arbitrary, fanciful, or unreasonable, or when no reasonable person would take the view adopted by the commission. The reason that the commission abuses discretion in reducing the penalties is that, first, no reasonable person in an impartial fact-finding position in a system designed to protect workers would disregard Supreme Court precedent, which tells us all we can't read exceptions, we can't place limitations, we can't read conditions into the statute what the legislature did not express in the statute, nor add provisions in the law. Supreme Court's given us that twice in the last 3 years in the McDonald versus Symphony case, and I think actually the Rosenbach versus Six Flags case, and there were a couple of BIPA cases, but you just can't add stuff into the statute which isn't there. That's the bottom line. So the fact that they said, okay, well, there's a tender requirement before you can get penalties under 19K and Section 16, there is no tender requirement listed in 19L. 19K or Section 16. The court has interpreted a tender requirement into 19L, arguably, though, because there's a provision in 19L which requires that it's a triggering provision which says if the employee has made a written demand for payment of benefits under 8A, which is for treatment, or 8B, which is for benefits. So if you make the written demand, that's arguably the tender you need to make. So I see why a tender would be read into 19L. And that's exactly what you said in your Anders decision from not too long ago. Not Anders, the Thies decision from not too long ago. That involved a 19L penalty award. They went to trial on the case. The employee hadn't tendered the bill that he wanted the employer to pay before trial, didn't give him a copy at trial. The employer kept sending emails, send me the bill so we can pay him pursuant to the award. They never did it until months later. And then the employee tried to capitalize on that and get penalties against the employer. The court said, you can't do that. It's your own fault that they didn't pay the bill because they said they would pay it. You just didn't give it to them. So that's how Thies has no application to our case. I'm not talking about 19K, or I'm not talking about 19L. I'm talking about 19K penalties being reduced, Section 16 penalties being reduced. Now,
Can I ask you a question?
of course.
This case, there were five separate claims.
True.
The commission issued five separate decisions.
True.
And so the question that I have is, how can you argue estoppel based on the decision in a claim that was not made as against Phoenix or the other one was
Yeah.
Phoenix and Keene. How can
Right.
you claim estoppel in a case they weren't party to?
Well, I think we look at the case as the entire case, right?
Well, wait a minute. It's not the entire case. There are five separate decisions,
Sure.
and they appealed. There was an appeal as to the cases, the decisions that went against them. Why
Sure.
should they appeal the decision, or how could they appeal the decision against the borrowing employer?
How could they? They could because the act and the rules don't say they don't add the additional number to the case, to the
Well, they have
petition
to
for
be a
review.
party to the case. They weren't parties. The only thing that
Just
happened here was this case was consolidated for hearing.
sure.
It was the separate opinions, a single opinion was not issued as to all three of these parties. And for estoppel, and are you arguing that they were in privy?
No, you don't have to argue privity. They were in the room fighting out the case.
No,
They
they were
were.
fighting out their own case.
So here's what we have. I mean, privity becomes a non-issue and becomes a meaningless concept if we're going to say that if people are not in the room, or even if people in this case, in this example you're providing, were in the room fighting out and litigating out the battle, how could we ever hold a non-party who wasn't able to litigate out the case liable under privity principles? That means privity doesn't exist under your theme, correct?
No, it doesn't. You can
Well,
always hold you can hold estoppel applicable to a non-party if that non-party was in privy to a party who was involved in the litigation. And
right. And privity is a due process issue, right? Someone who wasn't in the room fighting out the case. Do we then extend liability to them anyway, despite their due process rights?
well.
So in this case, Your Honor, in this case, we had all five sitting in one room fighting out the case. The reason AmerisafeSafe was in the case was because of strategic defense decisions. They wouldn't have been there had those decisions not been made. The finding against AmerisafeSafe, which is final judge, actually lays out the same factual issues and makes specific findings that Keenan and Phoenix were responsible for everything, including all the penalties and fees. When that didn't get appealed, how was that not a final binding decision binding everybody in a room? I don't know of any case which has multiple
Their
people litigating.
interests were adverse.
Whose
Their
interests were
interests were
adverse?
adverse. They were they it's not a party in privy whose interest is the same as the party to the litigation. First of all, they're not in privity. Second of all, their interests were absolutely adverse.
And so they're not, they're appealing their cases, one of their individual decisions they appeal.
I understand how this played out, Judge. You know, what I'm looking at is I'm looking at who has the opportunity to be in the room fighting out the case
I
in the same
understand,
system.
Mr. Nierman, what your argument is.
Sure.
I just don't buy that they're number one in privity, or number two, that their interests were anything other than adverse.
Okay. I think if you make that ruling, Judge, I think it's going to be a very unique and first-time decision for that, where people sitting in the same room litigating out under the same system can't be handed down contradictory rulings. I don't know that I've ever seen a case involving estoppel with that kind of a fact pattern playing out the way it is, and I apologize. Did I answer that? I know not to your not to
I
your
know what your
satisfaction.
answer, I know what your answer
Oh,
is.
sure. Do you want me to address the tender is not a defense arguments, or
Well, you might as well do, you also made an argument of res judicata,
right?
which is substantially different than estoppel.
Correct. I think that when everybody gets in the same room and fights out the case, if any component of that decision becomes a final ruling, it binds everyone who litigated.
Mr. Nierman, I don't disagree with what you just said. That decision, it's not that decision that you're resting your estoppel argument on vis-a-vis Keenan and
Phoenix.
Phoenix.
Right.
It's not that decision. There are five separate decisions,
Right.
five of them.
I'm resting it on the AmeriSafe decision, which was not appealed because those findings specifically allocate responsibility and penalties to Phoenix and Keenan. That did include all of the decisions, included everybody who was brought into this litigation. So I don't know how you could, and I mean, from a commission authority standpoint, Judge, how does the commission issue contradictory decisions out of the same trial, hearing the same evidence in the same forum? How does that become a possibility? The
Well,
commission has to be consistent, right? I mean, that's a due process
wait,
issue in my
wait,
mind.
wait, Mr. Nierman, let's say they should be consistent.
Sure.
Not that they have to be or are.
Okay, well, in this case, they were perfectly consistent, right? All the decisions were the same. And all I'm saying is all the decisions were the same. All they had to do was add that number to the case or never bring innocent parties into the case. AmeriSafe should never have been dragged into it. We wouldn't be here doing this. And I didn't do that. Okay, so the fact that it's there, the fact that it's final, it's not my responsibility to litigate out their case for them. So I know it's ugly. It's not pretty the way it played out. And I feel sorry for Phoenix and Keenan to some extent, but estoppel applies, res judicata applies. And I don't know any case where a final decision arising out of a specific trial where proofs are fought by all these different parties does not bind all the different parties. So that's the bottom line for res judicata. I'm running out of time here. Was there a different issue you wanted me to address?
Yeah, the last question I have for you is who filed the claim against AmeriSafe? You did.
What I did because Keenan and
So you can't
Phoenix.
argue that Keenan and Phoenix brought them into the litigation.
What
You filed the application adjustment of claim against them.
judge, because they raised a 1A4 argument saying that you're not naming the right party in this case. If they were right about that and AmeriSafe had the liability offloaded on them and I hadn't brought them in, I would be at fault for
I
not
don't
protecting.
dispute that, Mr. Nierman. What I disputed was your comment that said they brought him in.
Yeah,
They didn't bring him in. You brought him in.
well, sure.
You
I
may make
respond.
the argument that they caused you to bring him in,
Yeah, that's
but
true.
that you brought him in.
I misspoke. That's exactly what happened. I have to respond to how my defense strategy is unfolding before me. So I just respond to it, Judge.
Okay.
So I think my time is up. I'd like to reserve whatever I have left, unless you have other issues you want me to address.
You have, Mr. Nierman,
Pardon?
you're on yellow. You can go through the intersection. The red hasn't.
Okay. With respect to tender, tender is not a defense to a 19K penalty. Tender is not a defense to a Section 16 penalty. We can't read additional limitations or conditions into a statutory provision. Legislature has not put in that statute. And then the other reason there was an abuse of discretion of reducing the penalty award is no reasonable person standard sitting in an impartial decision-making position in a system built to protect workers would raise a tender defense which the employer had not themselves raised at trial. Since they didn't raise a tender defense at trial or claim I hadn't given them bills or they hadn't seen the bills or we would have paid the bills had you tendered them, there was no defense for me to respond to. When the commission raises that defense on its own, that means it is stepping outside an impartial position, raising a defense for one of the partisans, and we can't add additional evidence into the record under 19E. We haven't been able to do that since 1989. There's no way for me to respond to it when the commission sitting on review saying, where's the proof of tender? Well, it wasn't a defense that was raised. I can't produce the evidence now because we're barred from producing it. And we're not supposed to be littering the record in a simple and summary procedure under Section 16 with all this unnecessary proofs where issues are not disputed and defenses are not raised. So for that reason, the commission had no authority.
Can I ask you one simple other question?
Of course.
Isn't the Commission on Review empowered to review any issue presented by the evidence and the record? I don't think they are restricted to what's raised in the exception.
I think one of your recent cases said that the parties are limited to the issues that are in dispute as identified in the stip sheet.
The parties are limited, but not the Commission.
So then you're filling out my position, and my argument is the commission had no authority to step into the employer's shoes, raise its defense for it, which it didn't raise, and then think that there wasn't a proof that supported what they were thinking wasn't there. I mean, they stepped outside an impartial decision-making context to really relitigate the trial, raising a defense that hadn't been raised. It's just not fair to my client because we can't put in proofs at that point. So I think the commission was stopped and they abused their discretion in reducing the penalty and fee award. So I'd ask that you find that the arbitration decision is the appropriate award and reinstate it. And thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nierman. You'll have time in reply.
Thank you.
Ms. Kieswetter.
Yeah. Jennifer Kieswetter on behalf of Phoenix Logistics and Keeman Transit. Couple of interesting issues here. First, on the race judicata and estoppel issue. I know of nothing in the act or statute that would have allowed me standing to file on behalf of AmeriSafe. AmeriSafe had their own attorney, they had their own carrier, and they're a separate party. I know of nothing that would have allowed me under the law or the commission rules to just step in and add that to my petition for review. And in fact, I'm sure counsel would have been in here arguing that my petition for review should have been thrown out if I would have tried to add that in. But there's nothing under, I can't just create my own law or statute and file an appeal on. There's no question that I timely filed an appeal on Phoenix Logistics and the Keenan Transit decisions that were rendered. So there's no question on that. And when it comes to the race judicata issue, the parties were clearly not in privity. And I think we went through that. I'm not going to reiterate all of that, but there was a clear question here as to whether there was a contract under 1A4. Now, counsel reiterates multiple times in his brief and when he argues that Keenan Transit and Phoenix Logistics drag AmeriSafe into the case. Counsel filed the application. The application was actually only filed on the March 2015 accident, but he filed the application for adjustment of claim. Obviously, the petitioner has to file that. But I think the commission best clarifies after they looked at the evidence in their decision at the bottom of page 2, after they've looked at the evidence, what happened here. Because Phoenix Logistics and Keenan Transit, they didn't deny benefits based upon 1A4. When they ultimately denied the payment of benefits, it was based upon an IME. And they said, and I quote, however, the evidence shows that while respondent disputed its liability pursuant to section 1A4 of the act, it did not refuse to pay benefits due to that dispute. In other words, at no point did Phoenix or Keenan stop paying benefits due to a 1A4 dispute. So this allegation that AmerisafeRx was drug in because there was a denial of benefits under 1A4 doesn't exist anywhere in the record. Nowhere in the records did we say we're going to stop paying because somebody else is liable. At some point in the case, and there's really nothing in the record that I can find that really ever indicates when, there became a question, is there really even a contract here between the borrowing and lending employer? And AmerisafeRx got named, and there became a question, who employs him? Is it Phoenix? Is it Keenan? And then there's a deposition in the record of the owner of AmerisafeRx to try to determine what the contract is between the parties. A lot of those issues are not before you because I did not file an appeal. But the finder of fact, actually, and this is one of the rare circumstances where I am going to cite from a penalty decision from the commission in front of you, but the finder of fact got it right here. And they said they didn't terminate benefits based upon this 1A4 dispute. They terminated benefits based upon an IME. This had nothing to do with this 1A4 dispute and nothing to do with quote unquote dragging AmerisafeRx into the case. So for that reason, I think this res judicata penalties based upon dragging AmerisafeRx into the case, that argument doesn't really have any merit. As far as the parties being in privity, there's no question, and I won't, belabor the issue, but there's no question that AmerisafeRx and Phoenix slash Keenan, they're not in privity. They're arguing opposite positions here when it comes to whether or not they had a contract here. They are absolutely taking opposing views when it comes to the issues that were in front of the commission. As far as the argument as to the penalties and the delay of payment, Thies and Anders were both mentioned by counsel. There, whether or not the issue was raised in front of the arbitrator and whether or not the commission can raise the issue of the tender of medical bills, on the st stipulation sheet, the respondent clearly disputed liability for medical bills. The medical bills were claimed, liability for medical bills was disputed. That's all that has to be done, is disputing the liability for medical bills. There's nothing under the act that requires me to say, oh, and by the way, this is the first time that I have seen them. There's no special blank that has to be filled out. Often, that's what occurs. It's the petitioner's burden at hearing when he files a penalty petition to prove under that penalty petition that he has made the written demand, not my burden to prove that he didn't make the written demand. It's his burden to prove that he did, and he didn't make a written demand. And for there to be a delay, which is, I think, what Anders goes on to say, is when you're talking about the application of 19L, 19K, and Section 16, for there to be a delay, you actually had to show what it is that had to be paid. You can't delay a payment without showing what's actually owed. And that's why the commission here only awarded the $534, is because that is the only bill that actually wasn't paid by Acuity. So I would ask this court to affirm the decision of the commission in its entirety, and I'm happy to take any questions if you have them.
Any questions from the court?
Thank you.
Apparently not. Thank you, counsel. Mr.
Back.
Nierman, you may
Thank you, Judge.
reply.
Thanks, Judge. Back to the statutory provisions. We got to look at the text to see what it demands of each party. There's no text in 19K, there's no text in 16. Did I have to make a written demand for anything? Those provisions have nothing to do with making a written demand. Reading something into that means we're doing exactly what the Supreme Court tells us not to do with these statutory provisions. So a commission that's acting impartially would not read those additional limitations into it. Anders, again, that employer said at trial, we didn't get the bill. We haven't had a chance to pay it. We haven't seen it yet. They disputed. They made their defenses. They made their arguments at the time of trial. They were silent on the other side of this case. Keenan and Phoenix said nothing because we'd given them everything before trial. We've been set for trial multiple times. That's not in the record either. But that's why no defense was raised about that, I assume, because it would have been completely frivolous. So the fact that there's no defense raised about tender, there's no argument even presented, even hinting at tendering, there's nothing for me to respond to. I don't litter my records with additional stuff when someone's not disputing an issue. And I think that's consistent with Section 16's simple and summary as possible command for these things. No, they didn't terminate benefits over 1A4. I'm not even sure that's accurate. They terminated them over a falsified job description and a submission of that job description to an uncredible examiner, Dr. Gleason, as the commission found. The commission tarred that as quintessential bad faith, in addition to everything else they did, which the arbitrator identified. So if there's some kind of a tender defense, it must be a defense. If the employer has their own proof obligations in this system, it's to prove and raise their defenses, raise and prove their defenses. In this case, they didn't raise it everywhere else on every issue that I don't bring up, TTD, PPD, medical bills. I waive any issues that I haven't raised as a defense. There's a line in the stip sheet says other, I think it's O, and it says any other issues. There is no objection to even my penalty and fee request. So there's nothing for me to rebut by putting additional material into the record, in addition to the thousands of pages that I'm already putting into the record. And when the commission raises this sua sponte on their own during the review, when I don't have a chance to show them, yes, we have tendered this. Yes, here's the itemization of bills. Yes, here's the fee schedule. There's no way for me to do that on review. That is a due process violation. The commission should stay within its lanes, review the case on the evidence that was submitted, on the issues that were submitted, on the defenses that were actually raised and not waived, and allow us to return again to the arbitration decision. So again, Justice Hoffman, I understand where you're going. It's ugly, but I've never seen a case where a whole bunch of people, a whole bunch of defendants and petitioners are trying a case together, and the court, even a circuit court, is allowed to issue one decision saying all of these benefits awarded, these penalties are awarded, and to the next one, no, none of these penalties are awarded, none of these things are awarded. It just doesn't make sense. If there's a binding final finding arising out of a trial, that has to be the touchstone for estoppel applying, for res judicata applying. So Ameris APS had to be brought in by me, so I didn't commit malpractice by missing the proper employer when I was told there's a 1A4 issue. I have to protect my client's interests. And you got to remember, Judge, petitioners' lawyers don't get paid to do any of this work until it's all over. 10 years at this point. Eventually, we're going to get paid on this, hopefully. And then, we do everything we can to protect our clients and even more so. So I'm asking that you overturn or deem moot the commission's reversal or change of the arbitration decision, and I need to get back to the penalties they awarded by the arbitrator. And I thank you for your time. Unless there's any other questions, I'm done.
Any further questions from the court? No? Okay. Thank you,
All right.
counsel, both for your
Thank
arguments
you.
in this matter this afternoon. We'll be taken under advisement. A written disposition shall issue. At
Thank
this
you.
time, the clerk of our court will escort you both from our remote courtroom. We'll proceed to the next case.
Have a nice holiday. Take care, guys.